Your name is Big Brother. You say that you watching me on the telly. See me go nowhere. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're tired of me. You're testing.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Christopher Sprigman, who's a professor of law at New York University and co-director of the Engelberg Center on Innovation, Law, and Policy. He is co-author of The Knockoff Economy, How Imitation Sparks Innovation. And he has an article at The Atlantic with Jennifer Granick, U.S. Government Surveillance, Bad for Silicon Valley, Bad for Democracy Around the World. Welcome to Background Briefing, Christopher Sprigman.
Thank you.
And it's clearly there's been backlash to the NSA, not just in terms of domestic outrage over spying on American citizens, which led to a very close vote in the House. The president of Brazil at the UN, she was the first speaker at the UN on Tuesday, and she blasted the United States. Prior to that, she had canceled a state visit to Washington over revelations that the NSA had spied on her and on the big Brazilian oil company Petrobras. So you warned about this backlash back in June, didn't you?
We did. Jennifer and I wrote that article in The Atlantic, and it seemed pretty clear to us that there would be backlash internationally, and it seemed pretty clear to us that it could be serious, and I think that's, in fact, coming to pass.
And how much more serious could it be? Because the Brazilians have talked about setting up a BRICS internet. So if you have Russia, China, Sudan, and Saudi Arabia, all of whom oppose the present internet and want more control and the ability to censor the internet, are we heading in that direction?
So there are a couple of significant potential problems that Jennifer and I saw and wrote about in The Atlantic. So first, a huge percentage of the internet infrastructure in the world is in the United States, and that is, of course, great for the U.S. economy. There's a movement around the world, and this has been led, as you know, by Russia, China, and some other nations that wish to control the data originating in their country much more closely for reasons that aren't too attractive, as you can imagine. They want to spy on their own citizens more effectively. So there's a movement called data sovereignty, which aims to keep data that originates, say, within Russia closer to home. This is a movement that, in large part, the U.S. has opposed, and it's in our economic interest, but also in our political interest to oppose it. And unfortunately, the NSA revelations have handed the proponents of domestic internet sovereignty a tremendous weapon. They can now claim that they want to keep data closer to home so that the NSA can't get at it. That's probably, in a lot of cases, not their real motive, but that will be their public argument. And that's distressing. First, it should be distressing to the U.S. internet economy, which is potentially going to lose quite a bit of relative power. And second, and, to my mind more seriously, it's bad news for the internet. So much data being stored in the U.S. means that, in reality, the United States First Amendment and the speech protective rules that surround the First Amendment apply to a lot of online communications, even online communications by foreigners. The minute we start seeing this data stored abroad, especially in countries that don't have speech protection, that don't have much process that stands in the way of government or even private companies getting a hold of this data, we're going to see online communications become more inhibited. We're going to see the internet be less of an engine of free expression and of dissent around the world. And that's just terrible news. It's terrible news for everyone, but it's really terrible news for the U.S., which benefits tremendously from the open internet.
Well, but the U.S., you could argue, though, if you're saying that the U.S. First Amendment is going to protect all the data that's stored in the United States, even that of conversations and communications between and among foreigners and Americans, the Fourth Amendment's already pretty much out the window as far as the NSA is concerned, and the Fifth Amendment is threatened because of all this data collection, because they have the ability for you to incriminate yourself without knowing.
Yeah, so this is a terrible mess, as you've pointed out, and let me just just quickly say that I think what the NSA is doing is illegal. Jennifer and I wrote a piece in the New York Times. This is our first piece on the subject, describing why we think that the U.S. surveillance statutes that the NSA claims give it authorization to conduct mass surveillance, in fact, don't give it authorization to conduct mass surveillance, anything like what they're doing. So we think that they're exceeding their own authority, even under the federal statutes that govern them. And then, you know, there's the Fourth Amendment. So we also think that mass surveillance is simply not legal under the Fourth Amendment, that the Fourth Amendment does not tolerate mass-scale, suspicionless searches through people's data. Now, the NSA has a whole bunch of arguments for why what they're doing doesn't violate either the federal statutes or the Fourth Amendment. We take on some of those arguments in the article that we've done, so since we think they're bordering on, you know, senseless. So, you know, it's a mess, as you rightly say. But, you know, in the future, if a lot of data that currently resides on U.S. internet infrastructure moves abroad, we won't be able to fix that mess, right? We won't be able to unpack this and go back to a time when the internet was protected to a great degree by the U.S. First Amendment. Other countries' laws will begin to loom a lot larger when the data sits on servers in Iran, Saudi Arabia, Russia, China, Syria, etc.
Again, I'm speaking with Christopher Sprigman, who's a professor of law at New York University and co-director of the Engelbert Center on Innovation, Law, and Policy. He is co-author of The Knockoff Economy, How Imitation Sparks Innovation, and he has an article at The Atlantic with Jennifer Granick, U.S. Government Surveillance Bad for Silicon Valley, Bad for Democracy Around the World. So with this broadside from the Brazilian president in the opening speech at the UN General Assembly, and the threat that, as she has said, that they want to start a BRICS internet that will be an alternative linking Brazil with Vladivostok, Russia, then down through China, India, across to Africa, and then up to Europe. This, of course, will lead to the balkanization of the internet. But it seems to me that in terms of your concerns about this affecting U.S. business, the recent revelations that the NSA have deliberately subverted cryptography on the internet through secret agreements with vendors is a catastrophe, isn't it? Because every American internet company is going to be, you know, nobody's going to want to buy American internet products if they think there's a trapdoor in the software that's going to go straight to the NSA.
Right. So every potential deal between an American software company that has a cryptographic system and built into its software and any potential client around the world, every conversation I would imagine from now on is going to talk about how secure the software really is. Does the NSA have a back door? If you think about it, the fact that the NSA has a back door isn't worrisome just because the NSA has it. It's worrisome because what happens if it leaks out, right? So we have Edward Snowden, who is a vendor, right? He's not even an NSA employee. He's a contractor having unbelievable amounts of access to information in the NSA's top secret systems, and God knows how many other people have that kind of access. Now, you know, the NSA's back doors, that information is sitting somewhere at the NSA. Who knows who has access to it? Who knows who could release it? And once that information is released, my God, I mean, you know, this subverts the cryptographic systems upon which so much internet commerce relies. Now, this is a potential bomb that could go off and really do some significant damage to the online economy. It's really irresponsible of the NSA to be acting in this way. It's just contrary to everyone's interests but their own, very narrowly construed.
Well, there's something awry, obviously, at the NSA, and particularly with the leadership, General Alexander. I mean, he's built a control room, you know, the command center, that's a replica of the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. That makes me very uncomfortable. I mean, what kind of a mind does this man have? And he's obviously got the Congress completely intimidated. They just throw money at him. Whatever he asks, he gets. And the most disturbing revelation that I've seen from Glenn Greenwald and Edward Snowden is that Israel now gets all of the raw intercept data from the NSA. That's unprecedented. America's intelligence services have always been extremely suspicious of the Israelis. You had the Pollard affair. They know that Israel actively spies on the United States, and the idea it must be through congressional pressure that the NSA is giving away the store to Israel is mind-boggling.
In terms of the NSA's control room essentially mimicking the Starship Enterprise, that's kind of crazy, but I'm not sure what to say about that. In terms of getting data to the Israelis, you know, the issue for me as a lawyer is that, at least if the press reports are correct, the NSA is giving what is called pre-minimization data to the Israelis, which means essentially that it's data out of which the communications that the NSA should never have gathered under the law, that is communications purely between U.S. domestic citizens, right? These communications are not cleaned out of the data before it's handed over to the Israelis. And again, if the press reports are correct, the Israelis are not under any particular restrictions regarding how they use that data. So if you think about this and, you know, how it could work, this could be essentially the NSA laundering this data. It gives it to the Israelis at some point can give it back. You know, this might be a way that the NSA evades even the very minor loose restrictions of the minimization provisions. None of this, I don't think, is authorized by the federal surveillance statutes. I think this is all beyond authorization, illegal conduct. And at some point, I really hope that Congress holds some serious hearings on this. And I mean, you know, hearings that really delve into what they're doing exactly and what they can do under the law, because I really do think there's quite a bit of illegality going on.
So just in terms of the big picture here, Christopher Sprigman, again, professor of law at New York University and co-director of the Engelbert Center on Innovation, Law, and Policy. He has an article at The Atlantic with Jennifer Granick, U.S. Government Surveillance, Bad for Silicon Valley, Bad for Democracy Around the World. In your article, you argue that America's technology companies, our internet-fueled economy, and human rights and democracy the world over are now endangered by these revelations. And clearly, we're starting to see some political collateral damage with the Brazilian president blasting the United States just before the president of the United States takes the podium after her. And obviously, that's echoing around the world. We've also got a basic assault going on the internet itself here in the United States through the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in D.C., where Verizon is arguing basically that net neutrality should be struck down and that these commercial monopolies that control the pipelines into people's homes should be free to feed their customers what they want, as opposed to the open and free internet where citizens and consumers are able to go to whatever sites they want. And that has been the way the internet has been structured from the beginning. So it feels to me like the internet, as we know it, is under tremendous assault. And the people who really aren't helping this are the NSA.
Yeah, so you're talking about the case in front of the D.C. Circuit in which Verizon is arguing that the FCC's net neutrality rules are unlawful. So, you know, when I think of net neutrality rules, I think of them as being related in a somewhat odd way to NSA surveillance. So what Verizon and other ISPs want to do is they want to be able to discriminate between different sorts of internet traffic, slow some sorts of internet traffic down so that other sorts of internet traffic can go faster. And this creates all kinds of potential problems. So, for example, maybe they slow down the voice over IP service provided by a competitor, and maybe they let their own voice over IP service go fast, right? Maybe they slow down Netflix and they allow their own video streaming service to go fast. What's interesting about this is in order to do that, right, if net neutrality fails in the D.C. Circuit and Verizon gets to do this, in order to do that, they have to inspect the internet traffic that travels over their servers and discriminate one sort from another. If you think about it, that's exactly what the NSA is doing. So the sort of surveillance that the NSA is doing, Verizon, of course, wants to do something actually conceptually quite similar for its own private purposes. And, you know, it's difficult for Verizon or any other ISP to argue strongly against NSA surveillance when, of course, they have their own surveillance desires.
And they're also getting paid by the NSA to provide this metadata, aren't they?
Yeah, they're getting compensated by the NSA for the things that they have to do to their network to provide the metadata. You know, I don't know how they feel about this. On the one hand, you know, they are regional monopolies, and they want to keep the federal government sweet toward them. On the other hand, you know, the idea of having NSA equipment installed on their networks that they don't really understand, they don't know how it affects their networks, has to be distressing to them. So I'm sure they're torn, but, you know, one thing they're not torn about is they do want to be able to discriminate in the types of traffic that they either speed up or slow down. And, you know, that's a form of surveillance. So they cannot oppose what the NSA is doing with the same kind of rigor that they might if they weren't bent on eliminating net neutrality rules.
Well, I recall during the Reagan administration, Ronald Reagan made the joke that the problem with the Reagan White House is that the right hand doesn't know what the far right hand is doing. And it feels in this Obama administration, you've got this disconnect where you've got the NSA apparently running roughshod, and we still don't know what they're up to. And these everything that comes out is in these drips and drabs from Edward Snowden essentially is being verified. And we don't know how long the drip will go on. But the long and the short of it is that they keep denying and they keep being proven wrong from what we learn. So, but you've got the State Department out there funding NGOs as one of their top priorities is to maintain internet freedom and use the internet in the way that the young Egyptian revolutionaries did in Tahrir Square and the Tunisian revolutionaries, or that started the Arab Spring as well. So this is what I don't understand, is that here we are preaching to the world that you need the free and open internet as a prerequisite for democratic openings and changes, and at the same time, you've got this other part of the government screwing it up for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, look, hypocrisy is the kind of thing that you see from all governments. Governments just differ in how much they produce. But the thing that worries me, really, is the NSA, they're spies, and spies love to have data. I mean, that's what every spy wants, is they just want to see more and more and more of what's going on behind closed doors. And of course, those people believe in the mission. They believe that there's a threat to America and that they have to protect America from it. You know, this all comes back to the American people. Since 9/11, you know, we've been in a constant state of panic about what's going to happen next. And this has been exploited. It's been exploited by politicians to make lots of changes, right, to basic secure national security and civil liberties policies that probably never would have happened but for 9/11. You know, a lot of years have gone by, and we have some distance from those events, as horrible as they were. It's time now, I think, for people to start thinking about the nature of the threat and our response to it, and to start reeling back some of these reactions that I think have gone overboard. And NSA illegal mass surveillance would be number one on my list.
Well, just in closing, Christopher Sprigman, if this BRICS internet alternative to the current one goes ahead, as the Brazilian president has promised, and the Russians and the Chinese and the Indians all get aboard, and the Saudis and the Sudan and all these other repressive governments that argued against the current internet at Doha, and you know, there's going to be another meeting about how the internet is going to be regulated in the future. And some people fear that a lot of America's allies, like the Germans and the French and others, who feel extremely stung by these NSA revelations, even though, let's face it, you know, it's like that old the movie Casablanca, I'm shocked that gambling goes on in this establishment. You know, everybody knows that they spy on each other. So, you know, you have to take some of this indignation with a grain of salt. But the long and the short of it is, my understanding is that some of our allies are pretty peeved at us. And is that going to affect, give the Brazilians and others more ammunition to change the very nature of the internet and make it more open to control and censorship?
Yeah, it is. And the fact is, that's a very bad development for us, because the internet was our creature, right? We did most of the work that gave birth to it. We control a huge percentage of the infrastructure. We have a huge influence on the rules that govern it. And our influence, if we're not very, very careful, and if we don't start reassessing these policies soon, our influence is going to wane. And, you know, the internet in America's image has mostly been a positive force for, you know, progressive movements around the world that look to change governments and to democratize societies. An internet, you know, in Russia's image is not going to be able to play that role.
Well, Christopher Sprigman, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Christopher Sprigman, who's a professor of law at New York University and co-director of the Engelberg Center on Innovation, Law, and Policy. He is the co-author of The Knockoff Economy, How Imitation Sparks Innovation, and he has an article at The Atlantic with Jennifer Granick, U.S. Government Surveillance Bad for Silicon Valley, Bad for Democracy Around the World. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back talking about what is being done to counter the hysterical right-wing attacks against Obamacare.